us trampling on the stones. It's us down, down to the bone. Blood is thick, waters were known well, cousins were kept apart, mothers were often memories, fathers were not favored on the farm, for he could do some harm, he could wreck the master scheme, for he, brothers, could dream. Your mama ain't no saint, your daddy died in a shallow stream, but your uncle Dr. King did have a dream, my brother. And what is your real excuse? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Free love and sex ain't nothing but a game. Don't never last, try hope. Take a chance on love. Register to vote. Money ain't everything, but you could buy her a ring. Listen to Little Blackbird sing.
Homeboy by Sunchi Ali. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. And I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Our call-in number is 1-800-893-9562. This week on the Qumran Report, we will talk about the concept of radio drama with director and dramaturg Bill White, playwright Felix Rosales, actress Shirley Jordan, and Alma Collins. Welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you.
Let's start off over here with Alma. Can you tell our listening audience a little about yourself? How did you become a writer, actress?
I got exposed to acting when I was 16 years old. I was a young mother and needed to get out of the house. And my social worker suggested I try a theater group called the People Venice Theater Group. And the teachers there were James Whitmore, Ricardo Montalban. A lot of people from Hollywood at that time came down to Venice to teach us. And I never really thought about being an actress. But when I look back over my life, I was always performing, even as a little girl, performing, making people laugh, being on program at church and things like that. So that's how I actually got into acting, just that People Venice workshop. And being an actress helped me work through a lot of the things that was going on in my life at the time and even to this point. And I love it.
Okay. Shirley.
Yes, hi. I think I got started, back in high school, and I started doing high school plays. And I was a cheerleader, so that all kind of fell in together. And once I got out of high school, I went to the University of Connecticut. Go Huskies. Mm-hmm. And the girls are doing so good. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I digress. Grew from there. I moved to New York, did all kinds of theater, became a singer-dancer. Then I ended up moving out here because I figured, you know, if you're going to do it all, you have to see how both sides of the coast do it. You know, New York is more known for theater and out here is more known for film and television. So I just wanted to have a more well-rounded, career. And I ended up staying here.
Wonderful. Bill?
Well, theater is something that I feel most comfortable in. I'm able to work out a lot of issues. I'm able to essentially use theater as a mirror of society, and I like that. I started out at first not in theater. I was very professional in a career that was very high-powered and difficult. And I came back to theater. You know, I did it in high school and in college and all of that. And I found that it gave me a sense of peace that I didn't find anywhere else. That's why I'm here.
Okay. Wonderful. Really?
You know, I was thinking about this, and actually I started really young. I think when I was in second grade, I wrote some short little plays. And I had all my classmates, friends over, and I cast everybody, and I kept doing this. And I remember I wrote a radio play. I was in seventh grade, and I actually brought it into class one day, and we actually did it there. But then I kind of left theater for a while and got into music and did that as a college major. And then later in life, like in my 30s, I went back to school to do a film and TV degree at UCLA and started writing screenplays. And that was fun, but it was a little frustrating because I never really, I got some things optioned, but never sold or produced. And then a friend said, well, you know, you might try your hand at playwriting. So I did. And that was kind of very gratifying because then you could hear your words and, you know, you got a chance to hear them pretty quickly, immediately. And then got involved with a couple of playwriting groups, and one of which is First Stage, where I met Bill.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, let's know, how did you get involved with this particular play? How did that come about?
I had to ask Felix and Bill that question this evening, because I've been doing this particular piece for about 10 years now, mm-hmm. and I really honestly couldn't remember how I became involved. But Bill said he saw my resume, and he called me in. So I have to trust him for that. But that's how I became connected with Felix and Bill.
And this play, Uncommon Thread.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
Okay.
I believe it's the same for me, through Bill. Mm-hmm. And I actually replaced an actress who had done it the original time, mm-hmm. right? Okay. And I've been doing it since.
Oh, okay.
And actually, Felix asked me to direct it at First Stage. It was in a competition at the Secret Rose in North Hollywood on Magnolia. Mm-hmm. And we won. The piece came in first. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've been working on with him on it. Right. It's
Was it a finished piece when you got in your hair?
It was. We've made some changes since. Mm-hmm. But it at that time, it seemed to me finished. But as we began working more and more in it, we decided on certain things. I suggested something, and Felix says, no, let's do this. And, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of worked out. Mm-hmm. And I've asked, you know, Shirley, I know Shirley for a little while from First Stage, and she's a wonderful actor. And at first, I didn't know Alma, but I liked her look. And I liked her background. And when she started reading it, I said, yeah, this is who I want.
Mm-hmm. How important is casting for a director?
Very, very important. Mm-hmm. It's, if you don't have important act, well, not important actors, but if you don't have the right actors, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And some actors are better at other things. It's a very rare actor who can do pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. And our dear friend Shirley can do that. Because I've seen her in a number of productions.
Okay. So, Felix, how did this come about? How did the play come about? The thought?
Well, I was explaining earlier, one of the groups I was involved with was called the Playwrights Group. It's no longer around. But every year we would produce an evening of short plays that all our members wrote, and they'd usually have like one set. So there was one year where we did the kitchen sink plays. So we all did a play that took place in the kitchen. Then another year it was a museum. So this is the play that I came up with for that. And mm-hmm. and I have to also just thank one of my playwriting teachers at the time. She's her name is Alice Tuan. And she's just this brilliant writer. And she explained to us, okay, you don't think of anything as just a 10-minute play. It's a play. And you have to fill it with all the passion and emotion. And, you know, the theater has to now, these days, be as exciting as a theme park, as a roller coaster ride. So she had that, she planted that image in my head that, oh, okay, a lot's got to happen in whatever amount of time you have. It could be 10 minutes, it could be 90 minutes. So I have to thank her for, you know, kind of inspiring me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Look, let's, I'm going to have Miss Earlene Anthony read a little history of radio drama.
Radio drama, audio drama, audio play, radio play, radio theater, is a dramatized, purely acoustic performance broadcast on radio or published on audio media, such as tape or CD, with no visual component. Radio drama depend on dialogue, music, and sound effects to help the listener imagine the characters and story. It is audit in the physical dimension, but equally powerful as a visual force in the psychological dimension. Radio drama achieved widespread popularity within a decade of its initial development in the 1920s. By the 1940s, it was a leading international popular entertainment with the advent of television in the 1950s. However, radio drama lost some of its popularity and in some countries have never regained large audience. However, recordings of OTR, old-time radio, survive today in the audio archives of collectors and museums, as well as several online sites search as Internet Archive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Ms. Earlene Anthony. Now, what are your thoughts on radio drama as an art form?
I like the idea of being able to get the audience to hear and see and feel the emotion without being able to see it. That's exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so as an actress, if I can do that for you, help you feel, because we're such a visual society. Everything's TV, Instagram, internet, you know, videos. So if I can make you feel, if I can make you see, if I can make you understand by my words, the tone of my voice, the subject matter of the piece, then that's a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Shirley.
I completely agree with you, completely. I had a wonderful, wonderful experience with radio drama. I was part of this incredible show called We're Alive, the story of survival. And it happened to be about a zombie apocalypse. And this is how radio drama, right? It's evolved, you know? We have over 37 million downloads. It's a podcast,
wow.
Free on iTunes. And what I enjoyed so much about that was actually finally meeting the fans. We had a few live radio readings for them. And they packed the house. They drove cross country in a caravan. And they came to see us. And it was so wonderful to hear their thoughts about what we were doing and how we touched them. And yes, it's a zombie story, but they identified with the people. They identified with us, our characters, what we were going through, aside from being chased and eaten and things. They, you know, we had real relationships with each other. And that's all it's really about is, you know, to bring somebody into your world and be able to have them experience it and feel it and live it. It's like watching the most wonderful movie, only not seeing it, just hearing it. Mm-hmm. And experience it from head to toe. And that's what they did. And we were so, I still am so grateful to these people because they allowed me to understand what it was I was doing on this side of the radio and how much a radio drama can affect somebody's life. I mean, they can really, it's like, I guess, watching a soap opera for some people or getting hooked on your favorite television show and thinking that those are real people, and you know them, you know, I've been there, I know this person. And I was able to, you know, be the recipient of that, which was very heartwarming, very, very heartwarming. I loved it.
Okay. Bill, what do you think about radio drama as an art form?
I think it's wonderful, and I think it's wonderful because of the imagination. You can unleash someone's imagination because they're listening, they're not seeing it. And especially children, just wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. I used to do, when I was a child, I did some radio programs, you know, basic things, you know, something similar, not to Mickey Mouse, but something, you know, you walk around and you sing and you do that kind of thing. And I really loved it. Mm-hmm. And I kind of moved away from it. And this is kind of my first foray back. Mm-hmm. And I'm really enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I could see you doing that, Bill.
Really?
Well, I've always loved radio drama. And growing up in San Francisco, on Saturday nights, I think it was KGO radio up there, would play like 4 hours at Saturday night from like 9 to 1 a.m. of classic radio dramas. And I just got hooked. And they played a lot of Orson Welles, who was just brilliant. And in fact, I have this recording. You know, he did the Mercury Theater. He ran the Mercury Theater. Mm-hmm. And some of those productions are like, I can still hear. Yeah, they're amazing. Mm-hmm. And there's one that still haunts me. It's the John Galsworthy short story called The Apple Tree. And Bernard Herrmann wrote the music, and it's just one of the most haunting, beautiful creations that I've ever heard.
Mercury Theater. Yeah. Okay, that's wonderful. Let's take a little short break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back and get into our reading.
This is the community calendar for upcoming events. This Wednesday, March the 8th, 2015, at 6 p.m., there will be a special event, the screening of a documentary film called Ground Operation, Battlefield to Farm Field. This film is about military veterans from the Iraq and Afghanistan war, learning to farm and raise their own organic food. The location of this event will be the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard, Los Angeles, California. This is at the corner of Olympic and Santa Fe. This is a free event. All are welcome to attend. Light refreshments will be served, and there will be a time for Q&A. For more information about the filming, please contact 213-479-1764. And on Friday, March 27, 2015, at 6 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran will do a performance of a stage play entitled Nailed Heads. This play is about the 80 to 100,000 homeless people living on the streets of Los Angeles at any given time. The location of this event will be the St. Mark's Church, 3651 Vermont Avenue, Los Angeles, California. For information on this event, please contact 213-479-1764. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. The call-in number for our show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Hey, thank you, Ms. Earlene Anthony. At this time, I would like to turn it over to Bill White, who will lay the setting for the beginning of our reading.
Uncommon Threads. A one-act play by Felix Rasselas. Setting, the gallery of a museum in a large southern city.
Trusting things you can't see, seeking after peace, freedom, never finding the key.
The exhibition will take place in this gallery, currently the temporary quarters of our medieval collection.
Oh, look at that beautiful statue of the baby Jesus and his mother.
15th century Burgundian. All these decades of collecting, and we're still submerged in Eurocentric art.
You folks have done some beautiful work here. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you.
That statue looks like Angel Gabriel.
The angel of the resurrection.
I'm an angel of the Lord. An angel of God Almighty. Oh, no. I just love that show, even in reruns. Oh, are you all right, huh?
You frightened me. What were you doing?
You mean you never seen Touched by an Angel?
I don't watch television, and I limit the time my boys watch since they're in school.
Oh. I was ushering at church one Sunday when Sister Della came to give a sermon all the way from California. I just about died right then.
If we could please get back to the business at hand, Miss Johnson. You're a member of the Southside Women's Quilting Society?
Since I retired from teaching, I'm one of the founders, along with my sister Sally.
Now you understand you're entering your quilt under our Community Outreach and Access Program. The jury will review it for potential inclusion in our next exhibit, although there are no guarantees.
But the newspaper ad said...
The advertisement reprinted all of the exhibit guidelines, though I admit in small type. You'll need to fill out these entry and release forms.
Hmm. It's an entry form. Like at the county fair?
Not quite.
My quilt won first prize at the county fair last year.
Our jury members rely on their own selection criteria. Oh, I'll also need you to fill out this bio info sheet.
What was that?
We'll need these in the event your work is selected, along with an agreement to have your work photographed for publicity and promotion, all standard.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I didn't bring my reading glasses.
You can mail the bio info sheet back, but the entry and release forms you'll have to sign now, if you leave the quilt.
Well, do you mind holding this quilt for me?
Certainly.
Goodness, there's a lot of paper.
All part of our efforts to be more accessible to our constituents. Our director alerted me that I've been somewhat remiss in outreaching the senior suburban African-American socio-geodemographic cluster. So we're happy to receive your entry.
I'm filling a quota? Is that it?
No, not... Oh, you've missed the signature line. It's at the bottom. Oh, hopefully there'll be less paperwork in my next position.
Oh, a new job?
I'm being considered for the post of the South Bay Museum Associate Curator, pending favorable reception of this exhibition. You haven't signed the release form yet.
Well, don't you want to see the quilt first?
Oh, yes. Oh, of course. Patchwork quilt. Folk art specimen. Last quarter of the 20th century. Oh, unusual pieced work.
Oh, no. If you look closely, you'll see its applique.
Applique?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's some lovely detail here, Miss Johnson. Reminiscent of the work of Faith Ringgold.
Never heard of her.
Oh, you both attempt similar themes, but your piece contains highly unusual compositional elements. Scraps of baby clothes, odd metal bits, what looks like a blank panel. I imagine this is a new trend in quilt design. Oh, tell me, who is that remarkable face?
Oh, a member of my family who's passed away.
It's a fine piece of work.
Oh, thank you. I made it with my sister Sally. After our husbands died, you know, we had nothing but time on our hands. Then my grandson, Henry. I told Sally, you know I don't agree with them or their lifestyle, but those gay fellas who made that AIDS quilt, oh, they had a wonderful, beautiful idea. I said to Sally, why don't we make our own quilt for Henry? Even though he didn't die of AIDS, he deserves a quilt in his memory. That's why I entered into shows like here. I feel somehow some part of him, wherever he is happy.
I'm so sorry.
Notice the baby clothes. They were his. I saved them all these years.
Oh, Miss Johnson.
That patch of white, that looks like the place where Henry is now.
Miss Johnson, I'm very sorry.
Those metal bits, they're from the drive-by bullet that took Henry from us. He never could confess to his grandma he was part of a gang, but I knew. He just turned 18.
Oh, Miss Johnson, I had no idea what this quilt means to you. I cannot speak directly for the jury, but I will recommend that they include it in the dialogues of the diaspora.
Oh, my, that's wonderful. Oh, Henry, you hear that? Oh, but what's a diaspora?
Oh, the full title of the exhibit is African-American Dialogues of the Diaspora, Omission and Occlusion, a multidisciplinary examination of 5 centuries of art and historical objects documenting the ongoing psychological violence perpetrated upon African-American peoples. The centerpiece will be a major work by Indugo Chantier over in this area.
Indugo who?
A neglected African-American artist from the early 60s whom I've rediscovered. We're recreating his installation of decapitated Barbie dolls dipped in black paint, linked with ankle shackles. Now, if you would please complete the paperwork, Miss Johnson, I would really...
I'm not really sure if I understand this exhibit.
The board is giving me this opportunity to demonstrate the value of a comprehensive cross-disciplinary approach to education and presentation. And just by looking at your quilt, oh, I can assure you it speaks to the theme of this exhibition, to those of us who still are subject to oppression.
Oppression?
Miss Johnson.
You oppress? Oh, that's a good one, girl.
Miss Johnson, please.
No, wait a minute. Now, I have something to ask you. Do you recognize the address, 400 Hope Street?
Miss Johnson,
I asked you what 400 Hope Street is.
That's the address to the museum cafeteria, I believe.
Well, maybe today. But when I was a girl, I wasn't allowed into this building from the front entrance. You're too young to know.
Miss Johnson, I am sorry if
400 Hope Street was the entrance for us black folk. Do you understand me? You in that designer suit?
I didn't know that.
If you knew your history, you know quilts out on the clothesline showed us the safe houses on the Underground Railroad, the railroad that led us to our freedom. I won't let my quilt be a symbol of oppression, and believe me, I could teach a whole college course on that subject. But it ain't in my heart to cling to that old bitterness, that tired old political mumble jumbo. And I don't understand why bright young people like you get all caught up in it.
But, Miss Johnson, just look at your own family and Henry. Isn't that exactly...
You don't know any of the circumstances. Now, Henry, he made some bad choices. Some fool choices. But he was old enough to know better. I don't understand why God could ever have allowed it, but I must believe he had more important work for my Henry.
Miss Johnson, where are you going? What are you doing?
I'm taking my quilt, because somehow this doesn't feel right to me now. Sorry to have taken up your time.
No, but you just can't go. Miss Johnson, you have to enter the show. Please.
Let go.
Miss Johnson.
Let go.
Miss Johnson.
Let go of my quilt. What has gotten into you, girl? You let go of my quilt.
I am so sorry. I just don't know what got over me.
If anything happens to my quilt, you'll be mighty sorry. I'm gonna check it. Lucky for you, it's all right.
I just want your quilt to be in my show.
And you'll get your promotion if I enter. Is that it? You obviously had plenty of education, but you didn't learn much.
I do need unusual pieces like yours, Miss Johnson, for my show to be a success. And I need a success right now. I know you're thinking I'm well off, but what you're actually seeing is a frustrated single mother raising 2 teenagers by herself with no father in sight. I have been blessed or cursed with two boys hell-bent on getting into every kind of trouble, boys I can no longer control. My eldest was expelled last year, and I have just finished moving heaven and earth to get them accepted at a decent boarding school in another town, miles away from their so-called friends, something I can't afford on my salary. But I will have to moonlight, do some outside consulting, anything I have, because I have sworn that I will not come home one day to meet the police carrying my boys to me in body bags. I'm so sorry. I just don't know what I'm saying.
Here's the forms. And here's my quilt. Let me wrap it around you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Don't thank me. You think my angel Henry. Maybe he'll watch over you and your boys like he does me.
That was excellent piece. Let's go around and get some comments and talk about this reading. Let's start over here with Adam.
See, the thing I like about this piece, and it's one of my bandwagons, is how little our children know, some of the generations behind me. I'll be 65 this year. And they don't know their history. And I always say how... I'm not trying to sound political, but how do you expect the oppressor to educate you about your stuff? That's how they keep you oppressed. So what I like about this piece is in a little short 10 minutes, it gives a little history, the importance of our quilts, our artwork. It gave a little point of view from the single parent. And it kind of reminds me of what the movie Selma has done for some of the younger generations, because we don't tell the stories enough. And I heard a lot of young people just say, I didn't know. And then other people are surprised by that, but why are you surprised? Why would you expect the oppressor to educate you about your history? So I like this piece that just shares a little bit about the history. And I love this because I have another character play Harriet Tubman. I've been on tour playing her all over the United States and some schools along the Underground Railroad.
One woman show?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's just pulled that all together for me when I had the opportunity to do this piece here. Mm-hmm. Just knowing our history, just knowing some things.
Okay. And it's important to keep in mind that this is Women's History Month right here. So this is a perfect play for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Shirley. And
Sunday was International Women's Day, too, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about this piece is Felix's writing. I like the fact that he writes for women, and I like the fact that he writes strong women characters. It's few and far in between to find a piece like this for two women that says so much and that. You know, in so such a short of time,
in
like
10
you said,
minutes.
In 10 minutes,
amazing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot in here, and it's just wonderful to perform something like this, and that you don't really have to really think about it because he's written it so well, and it imparts so much information.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a beautiful piece, and it's very emotional for me, as you can tell, from the first time that I did this. Something just grabbed me, just in my gut, and said, you know, this is something that you're going to be with for a while, and, you know, here I am, still here, and I'm very grateful to that.
Mm-hmm. Bill?
I like the intersection between the old and the new. We never seem to connect. A lot of young people don't realize the sacrifices that older people have made. And this piece reminds me of a situation where the older character educates the younger character. But she doesn't say, remain where you are. She said, she encourages her to go on. She gives her the quilt because she knows that with the quilt, she will achieve something different. In other words, a lot of people say, oh, you're going to stand on my shoulder. This woman is saying, don't stand on my shoulder. Go ahead, do your thing. Know what you're about and move on. And this is what I really like the piece. And it says all of this in 10, 11 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. Mm-hmm. Felix.
Wow, well, I feel very blessed to have such wonderful actors and director, you know, bring this to life. And I don't know, you know, I can't ask for more, really. In a way, I'm just thinking, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a tribute, not that it was inspired by him, but, you know, my father, growing up, my father's best friend was an African-American man who was born in the Philippines, came over with my father, and he was like my uncle, basically. And he was the son of one of the soldiers who was in the Philippines for the Spanish-American War, you know, mm-hmm. one of those four regiments. Mm-hmm. And his grandparents were actually slaves from Alabama. So that's a whole other, that's for another show.
Wow.
that story, yeah. But in a way, kind of honors his memory too, just, you know, hearing this. And anyhow,
well, let me ask you this. In terms of structure, you know, most plays and scripts, they would say it's somebody's story, somebody goes on a journey. Who would you say, whose story is this? Who would you say?
I would say it's not only both of the women in the piece, it's a lot of people's story now. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of single parents, mostly female, but some male parents as well, who are really trying to do better. But they need to be reminded of what has allowed them to be able to do better, what mm-hmm. went before them. And that's what I like about Uncommon Threads. It allows that. It brings that to the forefront. Because you can have all the college and book knowledge you want, but there's some things that my grandmother knew and her grandmother mm-hmm. knew, mm-hmm. and some things that now that I have grandchildren, there's some things that I know mm-hmm. That have nothing to do with the internet and the cell phones and the iPhones and all of that. Mm-hmm. I got some information and knowledge that I can share with you. So that's what I think it brings to the forefront, and that's what I really like about this. And that's what I'd like to see more of, you know. Mm-hmm. The old heads sharing their knowledge. Sometimes you got to sit those children down, you know, remind them or inform them or enlighten them about what went before.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, how about your comments on that, Cheryl? Whose story is it?
She said exactly what I was going to say. It's our story and the people that have come before us. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it'll be the people that'll come later on as well. But mm-hmm. Everybody will just be a little bit more enlightened as we go along. Everybody will learn from each other, you know, each one teach one, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bill. How about you? Whose story? Who goes on the journey here? Who changes from how we see them at the beginning to the end? And is the quilt a character also? Is that the main character here?
It's not. What do you think? It's not the main character, but it is a character, and it brings them together. You know, it's the device that brings them together. But what I really like about this piece is it's a character-driven piece. The characters tell the story. By the end of the 10, 11 pages, we know these people. And of course, we don't totally know them, but we have a really good sense of who they are. And when we talk about structure, this is the kind of structure that I really like, especially for a short piece.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I do think I agree with what everyone said, too, about the journey. And I do think it's really both of them going on this journey and both discovering. And we were talking a little bit earlier how Felicia, at one point, you know, she stops thinking with her head and starts listening to her heart and then can change and open up. And then for Grace also, you know, it's, you know, she sees this woman a little differently, too. It's not exactly what she thought. You know, she's not exactly who she thought she was. She can relate to her in her own way. Mm-hmm. And I do remember, too, growing up, when I did, my aunt was this really feisty Filipino woman who I really admired, and I just really loved her. And it turns out she was, like, the very first Filipino woman to be able to buy a house in her neighborhood because of these Asian Exclusion Act here in California, all over the U.S., but in California, I think, you couldn't own property as an Asian American until like 1949. I didn't realize this as a kid growing up, but I gained an awful lot of respect for what my folks and, you know, the prior generations went through, you know, to create a life for me and, you know, all of my friends and family. I mean, you know, we did come from somewhere and we owe them quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And
okay. Let me ask you this, because every time I had actors and writers on, I asked them that. I'm going to start with the actors, because I had the actor David McKnight. I had him on. I had Dwayne Perry from The Roby, and I had Leif Simon from The Roby. And I asked them, what is the process for learning lines? Can we start? What is your process for learning lines?
I'm real methodical, and I'll read, I start at the beginning to memorize maybe the first third of the page. Then I'll go back to the top, and then I read down to the bottom of the page. Then I go to the top, and then I just do that top to bottom, because it's repetitive. But I will say that when the writer is a good writer, it's not hard to memorize the lines. It's hard to memorize lines when it's just not written well. I don't know how to explain it. If it's not written well, it doesn't flow off your tongue. And it just doesn't flow. That's the only way I can describe it. When it's written well and you understand the scene, you understand the character, you understand what's happening, you combine all those things together, it's not hard to memorize. It's only hard to memorize when it doesn't flow and the language doesn't roll natural off your tongue. And that may vary from actor to actor. I don't know that, but I know for me, when something is written well and I understand my character, I understand what the scene is about, it's not hard to memorize. That's how I do it.
Yep. What I basically do, if it's a scene in a larger play, I will read the full play so I know where the scene falls in order, and get a little more backstory for the character and who I'm talking to and what happened before and what's going to happen after. Then when I get to the scene itself, I'll just read the scene. Just read the scene. Just, you know, read it through and feel it through and see what my first impressions are. Mm-hmm. And who am I? Who am I talking to? Mm. Do I like this person?
Do you like to learn during the rehearsal process also?
Oh, yes, yes. I don't memorize immediately because sometimes I get things stuck in my head a certain way, and I can't get out of it. So I learn the lines along with blocking. I learn the lines along with exploration and improvisation and, you know, just working off of the other person until, like she said, they just feel right. They feel right.
if they don't feel right, then, you know, you have to look at it again and say, okay, what doesn't feel right about this? Do I have the character wrong, or am I saying the line wrong, or am I interpreting this line wrong? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's not your interpretation. A lot of times it is your interpretation, and your interpretation is not necessarily what the author intended. Mm-hmm. And that's where you have to go back and look. But I do it by rote. I go through the lines, I'll read them, and then I'll memorize them, and I'll turn the page over, and I'll even try to write them out. Mm-hmm. If I can write out the scene, that for me, you know, just cements it a little bit more in my bones and my body.
Well, let me ask you this, as an actress, what are your thoughts on improvising? Do you think, you feel that you can improvise without the permission of the director? What's your thoughts on how did that come? And then I'm going to ask Bill about how director feel about actors improvising.
Well, during rehearsal purpose, you improvise with the director. Mm-hmm. I don't think that you just could, you know, get on stage and just go off on your own. You don't know where you'll end up. But, you know, when the director's there and he says, you know, I see something there. Let's explore this. Let's see, you know, how you really work together. You know, there's some sparks or something flying here. Let's play with that moment. Now, what would you say if she said this? And you just go from there. And you bring in a lot of actors do that nowadays. And, you know, you'll probably see a film where there's a scene, at least one scene that's improvised that they left in the film mm-hmm. because it worked so well. Something clicked that mm-hmm. wasn't on the page. Mm-hmm. And, you know, come on, don't get rid of that stuff. That's gold. But mm-hmm. as far as rehearsal purposes, if I'm rehearsing a scene with my scene partner and we need to get over a little hurdle, let's improvise around this. Let's improvise around this and see what this feels like. Why can't we get over this? And it's like, oh, now I get it.
Okay.
And you play different roles. You say different things. You do each other's lines. Yeah.
Okay.
From my point of view, in terms of what the writer's written, I haven't written a lot of stuff, but the few things I've written, I want my words. Give me my words. Now, in terms of working up how you fill out your character, of course, improvisation is one of the exercises you do it. Mm-hmm. But I'm anal, so when I do a piece, I really try absolutely to give exactly the words that the writer has written. I don't feel like I have the license to toy with their words.
No.
And I had a part on Gilmore Girls, and they were so strict with the words. They were, if you didn't say exactly like they had written, they stop, go back. They wanted their words exactly. And for me, I don't toy with a writer's words. Mm-hmm. Unless there's something that we're stuck for some reason and you're working with the writer to maybe change it or whatever. But I memorize exactly the words as best I can. Exactly mm-hmm. the words.
Mm-hmm. Bill, as a director, what do you want an actor when they...
Generally, I want the words, but improvisation is great when you're trying to bring the character out. For instance, some actors just don't like their character, and improvisation really helps them to develop, because there's never a bad character. What we're trying to do is to show the audience how they came to this point. So improvisation sometimes really helped by having, let's say, an actor paraphrase what he's saying and then saying it, personalize it so that he begins to, when we talk about ourselves, we begin to try and see something different. Another thing is to, I sometimes may tell an actor to do something different. So as a scene is going on, the actor does something different and kind of throws the other actor, so she have to react. Mm-hmm. For instance, it's very important that you listen, you know? If you're, a lot of actors don't listen, and you have to listen to your partner, your scene partner. You have to react to what they're saying, not from, you know, what the script says. Of course, you have to say the same words, but you have to respond in that way by listening and responding. A lot of times, actors say things and it doesn't sound right, and that's because they're not listening. So I use that a lot when I'm directing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, what are your thoughts, Felix, as a writer?
As a writer, yeah, because I'm not really an actor. I've done a little acting, but I think for me, I have great respect for the actors. And, you know, for me, it's like a very collaborative kind of process. And so in developing a new work, when I bring it into, like, my group for readings, sometimes the actors will say, okay, well, why am I saying this? And, you know, and then I have to have a good answer for this, you know, like, and if I don't, well, then it makes me think, okay, well, you know, why? So I like that process. It also, you know, I was thinking too earlier that there's certain writers, like they're saying Shakespeare may have really just been thinking of a couple of the actors in his company for some of his great characters, like Richard Burbage, I guess, was like the model for Lear and some of the other great, you know, so, and I remember hearing like Isaac Asimov, his method of creating, he would visualize his characters on his typewriter and he would kind of let his fantasy take over and watch them interact with each other. So for me, it's kind of part of this process of creating and finding the story, finding the characters, and really knowing your characters inside and out.
Okay, thank you. We're winding down. Let's take a little less than a minute in peace for your closing comments. And also, I forgot to ask you what actors influence you. Can you make that part of your closing comments and contact information? We'll roll around real quick.
Well, I have to think about that. Modern day, current, right now I'm really enjoying Viola Davis,
mm-hmm.
her
mm-hmm.
vulnerability, her transparency,
mm-hmm.
you know, I really admire that. But I'd have to think about that question. I know when I was a little girl, I saw Dorothy Dandridge and mm-hmm. I was like, wow, you know, of course I love Ruby Dee.
Mm-hmm.
But modern day, I would say Viola Davis, her vulnerability and her transparency in her characters.
Okay.
I admire that.
Okay. Do you want to give any contact information for those?
If you need to reach Alma Collins, you can reach me at peacebestill3@yahoo.com. Okay. That's how you can find me, peacebestill,
okay.
and the number 3.
Okay.
Took the words right out of my mouth. Viola Davis is top on my list right now. I mm-hmm. love her strength and I also love her vulnerability. And she can portray both of them at the same time, which mm-hmm. just blows me away.
That's right.
Yeah, Angela Bassett is also up there, and Alfre Woodard for me as well. And if you would like to reach Shirley Jordan, you can find me at ShirleyJ1@mac.com.
Okay. Bill, yeah. Quick little closing comment. We got about 20 seconds.
Riches and Larry Richards from Yale. Larry, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. It's Larry Richards. He worked with
August Wilson. Lloyd Wilson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he also brought...
Lloyd Richards.
Mm-hmm. Also brought... I can't remember her name right now, to the stage, the first black drama on the stage. I don't have any current ones that I really like a lot of them, but I don't have any
okay.
specific ones. Yeah.
And for me, maybe in terms of playwrights,
mm-hmm.
Contemporary or just anyone, George Bernard Shaw. Just because he's able to take all of these crazy, brilliant ideas and theatricalize them all through mm-hmm. real live characters. And if
okay.
I could put a plug in for First mm-hmm. Stage LA, mm-hmm. we meet every Monday nights at 7:30 at the Avery Schreiber Playhouse, mm-hmm. and that's at 4934 Lancashire Boulevard in
North Hollywood. Thank mm-hmm. you. Now, I would like to a special thanks to my guest, Bill White, Shirley Jordan, Alvin Collins, Felix Rosales. Please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report by Googling in Qumran Report. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. From your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, and my co-host, Earlene Anthony, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with Homeboy by Sunji Ali.
There's only one blood, cause it ain't no sense in us trampling on the stones. It's us, down, down to the bone. Blood is thick, waters were known well, cousins were kept apart, mothers were often memories. Fathers were not favored on the farm, for he could do some harm, he could wreck the master scheme, for he, brothers, could dream. Your mama ain't no saint, your daddy died in a shallow stream, but your uncle Dr. King did have a dream, my brother. And what is your real excuse? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school?
School.
Free love and sex ain't nothing but a game.